I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we're on episode 53. We watched Django Unchained.
Django. Yeah, another Tarantino movie under our belt.
Another Tarantino movie.
But not the last one, if I'm...
No, we do have one more
coming
up.
Kill Bill, right?
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
Good old Kill Bill.
Good old Kill... That, I look forward to seeing that again. It's been too long. It had been a very long time since I've seen this movie, so...
It had been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah. It's not on my, like, the top of my Tarantino rewatch list.
Which is strange, because it's such a good Tarantino movie.
Yeah, it's a great fucking... I mean, spoilers, it's a great fucking movie. It's just I don't... You know, I was telling somebody the other day that if I was going to sit down and watch a Tarantino movie just for fun...
Django's probably not the first one I'm reaching for.
No, it would be Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for me, because that's my favorite of his. But
I've been really wanting to rewatch the 4-hour Hateful Eight cut.
You have fun with that, my dear.
And I think I will soon. Django Unchained came out in 2012. It was directed by Quentin Tarantino, of course. A lot of Tarantino movies on this list, which, for good reason, he's a great storyteller. Filmmaker. I love watching a Tarantino movie. His work, we've mentioned it over and over.
Yeah,
and over.
I mean, if you don't know who Quentin Tarantino is at this point,
or what movies he's done.
Yeah, and you've been listening to this podcast, then welcome to the first ever episode of Movie Mingle. You picked a weird one. You know, I know that they say that in radio, you always want to play to somebody that's like never
heard you before
or heard a radio station before, but like at this point
it's Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, fucking, you should know.
I'm sure listeners out there have a particular favorite of their own,
or they just dislike him, or in they general hate, like
they dislike him and aren't even listening to this episode.
Yeah,
so.
But you know, it's
because they're like Django Unchained,
Tarantino,
whatever.
Like fucking,
of course he wrote Django Unchained and writes all of his films, but he's also when it comes to his writing, he has done other films like True Romance, which is one of my favorite Quentin Tarantino screenplays that he did not direct. He also wrote the screenplay for From Dusk Till Dawn and wrote the story for Natural Born Killers.
Which I've only seen From Dusk Till Dawn of those.
Django Unchained has a lot of great music in it. None of it original for the movie itself, but original from other films.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Ennio Morricone...
He didn't do the music for it. They used his old music for it.
Oh.
Yeah, Ennio Morricone, his music was... Who's famous spaghetti western composer, or... Not just famous, but I think he created the sound for the spaghetti western.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is like, when people think about spaghetti westerns, like it's partly his music that they think of, because it had such an impact on those films.
Tarantino has such a big regard for Ennio Morricone that he has used him in a lot of his movies. Mm-hmm. Since Kill Bill, essentially. Kill Bill, Death Proof, Glorious Bastards, and Django Unchained. Those films have had his music in them a lot.
Yeah.
And Hateful Eight was the first, because he's obviously loves the sound of Ennio Morricone.
Mm-hmm.
He finally got him to actually compose one of his movies,
yeah.
That being The Hateful Eight.
And that got him his first ever Oscar.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, that's... after working on this film, Morricone said he probably would never work again with Quentin Tarantino. And then they went on to do The Hateful Eight, which earned him his first Academy Award.
Cinematography was done by Robert Richardson, who has been working nonstop for decades. He worked on Platoon, Wall Street, Born on the 4th of July, The Doors, JFK,
damn,
A Few Good Men, Natural Born Killers, Casino, Nixon, the one with Anthony Hopkins, Wag the Dog, The Horse Whisperer, Snow Falling on Cedars. I mean, it's...
Yeah, he's done the thing or two. Wag the Dog.
But then we get to the part of his career...
Yeah.
Where Tarantino and Scorsese fight over him.
Oh, yeah. I think we talked about this. Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about this before because we've done...
you know, Inglourious Basterds, Wolf of Wall Street.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Scorsese used him for Bringing Out the Dead. Then Tarantino used him for Kill Bill. And then back to Scorsese for The Aviator. Back to Tarantino for Inglourious Basterds. Back to Scorsese for Shutter Island. And Hugo, so you got a double on mm-hmm. that one, and to one-up Scorsese, Tarantino had him for Django Unchained, The Hateful Eight, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
All right. I mean, the cinematography of this movie is fantastic, as all Tarantino films are.
And then somehow Ben Affleck got him later for his movie Air.
Oh. Well, everybody's got to work, I guess.
But Robert Richardson has 3 Oscars, one for Hugo, another one for The Aviator, and JFK. Rotten Tomatoes has Django Unchained at an 87% from critics, but a 92% from audiences.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I could kind of see critics not completely going for, you know, Tarantino's take on a slavery film. You know, at 87, that's not bad. That's a solid B, you know.
This is Tarantino's second revisionist history.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure what the re-envisioned part of it is, other than a slave killing slave owners.
I mean, it's not revisionist in the way that, like, you know, Hitler wasn't gunned down in a movie theater,
right,
unfortunately, and neither were the Manson family.
Yeah, the Manson family was not.
Yeah, again, unfortunately. But yeah, just the mere idea of, you know, what Django and, oh, Robin, producer Robin has decided that my area of the table is precisely where he needs to be laying to take a nap. But anyways, yeah, just the revisionist history of, like, you know, it wasn't actually like this. There's no way that, you know, Django could have actually waltzed into any of these areas, even as a free man, and gotten away with what he got away with.
I mean, there were black slave owners.
Yeah.
Or free black men who were responsible for slaves, like, still mm-hmm. worked for a white man, but...
Oof, a special place in hell for those guys.
I mean,
yeah,
it's a special kind of history, a special time in history that...
A shitty time
I mean, of course it's shitty, but I feel like there's a whole amount of history and mm-hmm. growing up in that... Being in that time, the time of such hate and disgust, and you look back and you're just like, how? But then also
you look at life right now,
looking forward, and you're just like,
oh, that's
so not much has changed.
Yeah, like, oh, great.
Now laws, but laws can be changed too, as we've seen.
And now we have Nazis again. Like, what?
Yay. Wait a minute.
Oh my God, what I wouldn't do for a real life GI robot.
A G.I. robot would be great.
Yeah.
The
Bear Jew.
The Bear Jew.
Yeah.
Would be great. Or Apache.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Yeah, Brad Pitt from Inglourious Basterds. Like, if those guys were alive today, life might be a lot more entertaining and a lot better. But here we are.
Indiana Jones.
Oh, fucking, if punching Nazis is good enough for Indiana Jones, it's good enough for me.
He taught me how to punch a Nazi.
I need that on a t-shirt. I need a t-shirt that just says, punching Nazis is good enough for Indiana Jones. It's good enough for me. I can't believe that we were all raised by Indiana Jones, and some of us still think it's okay to be a... Anywho, that's off topic. You know, it's been a while since I've taken an American history class. Obviously, you know, it's no shock to say that we here at Movie Mingle do not condone slavery or any of the actions of slave owners or anything of the sort. Like, obviously, fuck those guys. I hope they're all burning in the depths of hell. I'm somewhat ignorant in the overall full history of everything that happened. I mean, that's one, because I don't think I could stomach it as a modern woman living in this era. And if at any point... Caveman and I are ignorant about something, I mean, you know, just bear with us. But
I think there have been a lot of great films of the past that have
But I haven't seen a lot. Because, like, you know how I will look at a movie and be like, oh, that's not pretty high on my bummer radar? Most slavery films are pretty high on my bummer radar.
Have you ever, did you ever watch Roots?
No.
So, yeah. Well.
I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave. I didn't see the one that Will Smith was in. I don't tend to go for slavery movies because Bummersville, USA. And unless they're, you know, unless the people who own the slaves are getting murdered and spectacularly, like in this film.
It is fun to watch.
Yeah, it is really fucking fun to watch all these assholes get.
Man, that first scene with the brothers, the three guys that they just take out one by one by one.
Mm-hmm.
So satisfying. I like to watch you bleed.
Racism is so fucking stupid. Like, it's quite literally looking at somebody else and thinking, I look different from you, and therefore I hate you because of that. Like, it's so goddamn stupid.
Or not, I hate. Sometimes it's not even I hate, but it's just a person that just feels more superior.
Yeah.
I'm superior than you because
I look this way.
I look this way.
Like, it's so goddamn dumb, that mentality of, like, well, you look different than me, so I'm better than you. Like, fucking grow up, you assholes. Like, that's so fucking stupid. Just because somebody comes from another country, speaks a different language, has a different color of skin, they're beneath you because you're some pasty-ass white person from middle America? Like, go fuck yourself. I mean, imagine that mentality. And, like, to be fair, I was raised by a racist, so I'm not completely, you know, divorced from it. But I couldn't even understand it from that point of view either. It was a matter of, like, I never understood why that person in my family was so angry at other people just for existing. And still so angry about it. It's just so fucking stupid.
It's so fucking stupid.
And, like, you know, here we are making laws about it still. I mean, it will never be the Gulf of America. Like, come on. If I still call Pluto a planet, the Gulf of Mexico will always be the Gulf of Mexico. But it's racism. It's the same people that are like, oh, Captain America can't be black. It's like, go fuck yourself. Just fuck off. Like, we don't need people like you. They're just dumb. But unfortunately, a lot of them are in power. But it still doesn't mean we shouldn't call them out for being...
Call them out for being dumb and racist.
Fucking stupid. It's fucking stupid, man.
Django Unchained was made for $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
Making it the most expensive Tarantino film.
That's shocking to me, because how did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood not cost more than $100 million?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is his second most expensive at $90.
I feel like with costumes and having to, like, basically turn Hollywood back into the 60s, that would somehow be more expensive.
First of all, the squib budget in Django must have cost a fortune.
That is true. This is a very violent movie. I mean, the amount of fake blood on that set was a lot.
But not only was it his most expensive film to make, but it was also his biggest box office. It made $163 million domestically.
Nice.
$287 million internationally.
Woo!
And another $66 million on home media. For a total of $516 million.
Jesus Christ.
He has Django is a half a billion dollar movie. And
I mean, like I get it because it's a great film, but I don't get it because it's not Tarantino's best work, in my opinion.
Right.
But I can't understand why people would have come out to watch this. At the time, Jamie Foxx was a big fucking pull. And they advertised the shit out of that movie.
Pulp Fiction is Tarantino's most profitable film he's ever made, because it was made for $8 million, but it made over $200 million, and which almost 27 times more than what it cost to make it.
Yeah.
So that is his most profitable project. It was nominated for 158 awards, including 5 Oscars. Best Picture, Actor in Supporting Role, Original Screenplay, Cinematography, and Sound Editing were what it was nominated for.
Mm-hmm.
Christoph Waltz won. He went up against Alan Arkin in Argo, Robert De Niro for Silver Linings Playbook, Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master, and Tommy Lee Jones in Lincoln.
That's... Tommy Lee Jones is fun in Lincoln. I've seen some of those films, not all. When I was kind of in my head going through those performances, I was like, okay. Like, I get it. Christoph Waltz is fucking... It was a supporting actor, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Fucking phenomenal in this film. Like, he is such a joy. But I really did like Tommy Lee Jones in Lincoln. I really like Lincoln as a movie and as a whole.
I only saw it once.
Man, do you want to watch Lincoln again? It's a delight. You watch that movie and you're like, holy shit, that person's in it and that person's in it and that person's in it and that person's in it. Fucking Adam Driver is in Lincoln.
Adam Driver is in Lincoln. Wow.
And shares a scene with, what's his face, with Lincoln. Daniel Day-Lewis. And it was when he was like a young actor. You've got to imagine he was probably on set, like dinner plate eyes. But fuck yeah, Lincoln's a great film. I would say it's probably my favorite modern Spielberg movie.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I'd probably agree with that. Quentin Tarantino won the Oscar that year for Best Original Screenplay. He was up against Amour, Flight, Moonrise Kingdom, and Zero Dark Thirty.
For original screenplay?
Yes, for the original screenplay.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, this is the most original of all those films.
He has only won... Quentin Tarantino's only ever won two Oscars.
That's shocking.
One was for writing Django, and the other one was for writing Pulp Fiction. And that's it.
Yeah.
And you think about everything that he's done, including...
The fact that he hasn't gotten a Best Director.
And he's been nominated for, you know, plenty.
Yeah.
He was nominated for screenplay for Inglourious Basterds. He was original. He was nominated for screenplay for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood even got the nomination for Best Picture.
Yeah.
Directing.
It should have fucking got it.
But Inglourious Basterds, he also got nominated for director. Same thing with Pulp Fiction.
One of those things that if he really does finish with 10 films, right? That's the amount.
That's what he says, but, you know.
If the 10th film is even remotely good, is that going to be the year that he gets everything in the way that they're like, oh, Leonardo DiCaprio finally deserves the Oscar for fucking The Revenant, even though that's not his best performance, but we're going to give it to him now because he deserves it. One of those, like, you know, we're giving it to Matthew McConaughey for his lifetime achievement.
I hate the idea.
Ways for Dallas Buyers Club.
I know. I hate the pity award. Like, you've never won, so now we're going to give you an honorary one or lifetime achievement award.
But it's not honorary or lifetime achievement. It's just like, you deserve it now. And we're going to give it to you now.
Like the Lord of the Rings did with Return of the King winning Best Picture.
I'm thinking of like the way that Leonardo DiCaprio got the Oscar for The Revenant and not like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or fucking...
Yeah, but did you see The Revenant?
No.
He deserved that shit.
Does he? Is that better than Wolf of Wall Street?
They're two completely different kinds
I'm just
of,
saying,
like the acting.
There are some years where you're just like, oh, this actor keeps sweeping, and it kind of seems like they're giving it to him because
the main difference,
they deserve it.
The main difference, and I could kind of see how it would look from the outside looking at him winning for The Revenant instead of, because he is amazing in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some of the best acting I've seen him
great in that
do
goddamn movie.
Between... Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Wolf of Wall Street, those are like the two that I think Leonardo DiCaprio, he's amazing in Django.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
But I think his
so hateful.
I think his best, absolutely hateful, but I think his best was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and
Wolf of Wall Street. I'm just saying that I feel like some years at the Oscars, it seems like, you know, it seemed like they were giving Matthew McConaughey the Oscar not just for Dallas Buyers Club, which I also have not seen, because
you don't want to watch Jared Leto.
I don't want to watch Jared Leto as a trans woman. Like, gross. How dare they? How dare they? Anyways, how fucking... But, like, it felt like it's like, you've had a great career and you haven't been fully, you know... awarded for that great career, so this is the time.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Wolf of Wall Street with his acting are very much great acting, a lot of dialogue, a lot of big moments, and really fun to watch, entertaining to watch. He's entertaining to watch in those movies. The Revenant, he hardly has any dialogue at all. But I wonder if it was just the situations that he put himself in, like the stuff that he had to do mm-hmm. on set, even though the sets were not sets. And, you know,
he ate the liver and...
Well, see, and that's the thing. Like, are we giving awards to people who just put themselves in crazy situations?
But I felt like the Revenant Award was, you haven't won one yet, so we're giving it to you this year. Not out of pity, but out of recognition for this.
Who was he up against, though?
Oh, fuck, I don't remember. You're the madman with the computer who knows all this shit. I'm just saying that, like, he deserved the Oscar for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He was so fucking good in that movie. And I, you know, admittedly, have a bit of a hard-on for that movie because it was my favorite Tarantino film. All this to say, he's great in this film, too.
Yeah.
And if there was a Best Villain Oscar, he definitely would have won.
So, I'm going to say right here that because of I've seen The Revenant,
yeah,
he was up against Bryan Cranston in Trumbo.
Okay.
Matt Damon in The Martian.
Matt Damon.
Michael Fassbender and Steve Jobs.
Mm, all right.
And Eddie Redmayne and The Danish Girl.
Well, I mean, they do love giving it to straight white men who play trans women. But, you know.
Not that year.
Not that year.
I watched The Martian. I've seen Steve Jobs. I have not seen Trumbo. And I didn't see Trumbo. No. And I didn't see The Danish Girl.
I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve the Oscar for that film. What I am saying is that it felt to me that year like he was getting it not just for The Revenant, but also for all of his hard work. Because people were like, oh, he was snubbed because he didn't get it for Wolf of Wall Street. Blah, 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 blah. You know, it was like the Academy being like, all right, we get it. It's finally time to give Leo his Oscar. You know, that's how it came across to me.
I get it. But I also feel like that year with that competition, mm-hmm. that maybe he did.
Okay. Yeah.
Like,
I'm not going to watch The Revenant because it looks spooky. Well, not spooky, but just scary and it's gory and long.
It's long. But there's some beautiful shots done in it.
Yeah, well, so is The Thin Red Line, but I'm not going to watch that movie ever again either, so.
Thin Red Line and and The Revenant are very different.
I was just it's long and there's some beautiful shots.
We're not never doing a Terrence Malick film on this.
Terrence Malick, Terrence, I don't know. Malick.
Like, unless we get
shots of trees.
Unless we get a sponsor on this podcast, I'm not.
And that sponsor specifically is like,
you have to do have a Terrence Malick film. Movie.
It would be The Thin Red Line because that's.
I would hope so because I think that's his best.
That's the one I can tolerate. But if it was like the fucking. That one with Brad Pitt where it's just a bunch of trees blowing in the wind, like, kill me. All Terrence Malick movies are just trees.
Book of Life?
Yeah. No. I wanted to say Book of Life too, but I was.
No,
like,
Tree of Life.
Tree of Life. See, fucking trees.
Fucking trees.
Terrence Malick and trees.
Like, get off the trees, like, dude.
That movie, if you cut out the trees from that movie, I bet you it's 45 minutes long.
So since we've been talking about Leonardo DiCaprio, mm-hmm. you want to get into the cast?
Let's get into the cast.
Well, Leonardo DiCaprio's in this movie.
Yes, he fucking is.
Do you have a favorite Leonardo DiCaprio movie?
Well, I mean, it's obviously Romeo and Juliet. Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, but that's a personal preference thing, not his best work ever. Fuck me, do I love that movie. And I hope to make you watch it with me one day for this podcast, because goddamn, I mean, like, yeah, he's great. Like, he's fine in Titanic. He's great in The Man in the Iron Mask. I had a huge crush on him when I was younger. Like, I had a poster on my wall for years of Romeo looking through the fish tank at Juliet, you know, that was like my obsession. I might have kissed it a couple of times, but you know, who doesn't do that sort of stuff? And then obviously Wolf of Wall Street and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for his newer stuff. Fucking phenomenal. He's an incredible actor. He well deserves all the awards he's ever gotten. But Romeo and Juliet, man, that movie means so much to me.
A couple other ones that you didn't mention, but that I like, because all the ones you mentioned, I like. But you got The Beach.
I saw that once and I wasn't impressed, but I was young and I don't think I fully understood it.
I have
God, is it right next to you?
I think somewhere on my bookshelf. Oh. I think I have the novel,
oh.
The Beach, because, of course, it's written by Alex Garland.
Mm-hmm.
He was the author of The Beach. And then Alex Garland later went on to become a screenwriter and then a director. He's a writer, director now, and he's the guy behind Ex Machina, mm-hmm. and Annihilation and Civil War and Men and all those movies. So that's The Beach was always a movie that I enjoy. There's also Martin Scorsese's Gangs of New York.
Yeah, that's...
I really like...
That's him a rough in it. Movie to get through. I mean, I saw it once. I think I tried to rewatch it again not too long ago with you, or you were watching it.
It was probably on.
Yeah, and I
think I fell asleep to it, and you probably walked in on it.
Yeah, and I sat down, and I was just like, you know why? You know why?
Why is that?
Cameron Diaz cannot fucking act her way out of a paper bag.
Cameron Diaz in that movie is so bad.
And it ruins the film to an extent. You're like, right.
I am so entertained by what Leonardo DiCaprio and Daniel Day-Lewis are doing in that movie that I don't care about Cameron Diaz. The Departed is also
which I've never seen.
It's a perfect film. And every actor, including Marky Mark, do a really good job in that one.
You know what's annoying? Like, this goddamn podcast of ours, this wonderful, strange little thing that we've been doing for almost a year now, it's changed the way I've viewed films. It has changed the way that I have, that I've become a film fan. Yeah, you're welcome. So, like, movies that I was like, I don't want to fucking watch this ever. I just don't care. Now I'm like, all right, shit, maybe it is as good as everybody says. And I feel like The Departed is one of them. Like, so I might...
We don't have to do it for the podcast, but I would love to watch The Departed with you.
The problem is that every time we talk about the amount of movies that we want to watch...
I know.
We don't have the time.
It's a never-ending list.
It's a never-ending time.
Because every episode makes us go, ooh, let's watch this.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how many episodes ago it was that we talked about it, but ever since we mentioned the movie Timeline...
Yeah, I'm wanting to get high. I've been wanting to
watch it so bad. But
and we haven't.
All this to say... that I think my favorite character and performance and movie that Leonardo DiCaprio did was Catch Me If You Can.
Fucking Catch Me If You Can is such a good movie.
It's such a good movie.
It's such a good movie.
He's so good in it. Tom Hanks is so good in it. It's one of my favorite modern Spielberg films.
Yeah. Yeah. Like from that era. It would
I mean, 2002 is over 20 years ago, so modern's not really.
No.
But I still
that
feel.
Era of
I still view everything after 2000 as modern.
It's not, though.
It's the modern age.
No, it's not.
2002.
Now we're back in the 40s.
Hey.
Oh, God.
Jamie Foxx as Django. I love Jamie Foxx.
See, I was.
There's movies that I don't care for him in.
Yeah.
Which he definitely went through a lot of time in his career where he's like just that. They tried to make him an action hero.
They really did with like Stealth and Jarhead.
Yeah. And I don't, he's not Miami an action. Fights. He's, yeah. My, no. He's, that's not his, that's not his thing. I think he's really great in Django as Django.
Yeah.
I really loved him in Collateral with Tom Cruise.
I never saw that.
Really, really good movie. If you like Michael Mann films, which I know you do.
Well, I like Heat.
You do like Heat.
Fuck, do I like Heat. How have we not done a bonus episode on Heat?
You're not wrong.
Like, one of the greatest films ever. Spoiler alert, like 6 out of 5 stars. Perfect film. How have we not done Heat?
It's the best film with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro in it.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely is, yeah.
And they were both in Godfather 2. That's right.
I
just said
it.
Heat was better than Godfather 2. But yeah, all that dumb stuff to say that Collateral is a fun movie. But yeah, do you have a specific Jamie Foxx movie?
You know, as I'm going through this list, it's a lot of no, no, no. So I'm going to go ahead and just say it's Spider-Man No Way Home. You know, we haven't gotten to Baby Driver yet, so I can't talk about how I feel about that movie. He does have a cameo in A Million Ways to Die in the West as Django Freeman, but I can't really count that. I didn't see White House Down. I haven't seen Horrible Bosses. I haven't seen Valentine's Day or the Soloists or Law Abiding Citizens or Dreamgirls or Miami Vice or Stealth. Ray was good, but I only saw it once, so I can't really go off of that.
Same. I enjoyed Ray.
So I'm just going to, I have to say No Way Home because that's my favorite movie that he's been in. And this, I mean, he does a fantastic job in this, but, the funny thing is about, this movie and Jamie Foxx is I settled into it and I had my notebook there and the first thing I wrote down was I don't buy Jamie Foxx at all. Because in my head, I was thinking of, like, modern Jamie Foxx and, like, all the kind of dumb movies he's done recently.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't really, like, I just didn't really care. And I was like, oh, you know, like, he's not my dude. I don't necessarily think he's that great of an actor. And I was thinking about him, too, and, like, in Living Color, you know, and when he used to play, like, goofy characters. And I was like, oh, I don't know, Jamie Foxx. And then I watched this movie and I was like, oh, yeah. That's why people like Jamie Foxx, because he's fucking magnificent in this film. Sometimes I feel like I see him and I'm just like, that's just Jamie Foxx doing a role. And other times he kind of gets sucked
into the
character.
Sometimes he is just Jamie Foxx playing the actor Jamie Foxx. Yeah. Because he doesn't usually have a lot of range.
No.
He was great in Ray.
Yeah.
I really liked him in Baby Driver.
Which we'll get to soon.
He was in the really shitty Robin Hood with Taron Egerton.
Yeah. As Little John.
Was he, though? I mean, his...
That's what it says. That's what's listed. It's 2018. Robin Hood, Little John.
Oh. Mine says he plays a character named Yaya.
Oh. Yaya.
And it's spelled the same way that Yaya spells his name. Yaya. Christoph Waltz plays a really great character in this. I mean... I feel like Tarantino really teased us with everything that Christoph Waltz was doing in
Inglourious
Bastards. Because, he's evil and you celebrate when he gets his comeuppance.
Yeah. He's so great at being so bad.
He's so great at being so bad.
And in this movie, he's so pure.
He's so pure.
And he's such a good man. And I just adore him.
It was a great turnaround to see Christoph Waltz play both characters, play the villain, then play the kind of hero. I always wish I could see more of him, and he's just not in America. He's not in a lot. He was in The Legend of Tarzan, The French Dispatch, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
But he's also going to be in Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein with Oscar Isaac. So
that will be, I mean, sure.
If I had to pick a favorite movie of his, it would probably be this one, in all honesty. He is great in Glorious Bastards, but I prefer his character here. I didn't see The Green Hornet or Water for Elephants. I did see The Three Musketeers that he was in. That was the one with Orlando Bloom.
That was a terrible movie.
But I only ever saw it once, and it was stupid.
Same thing with The Green Hornet. The Green Hornet was so bad.
I never saw Muppets Most Wanted. I didn't see Horrible Bosses 1 or 2.
Muppets Most Wanted was bad.
I haven't watched a lot of the modern-day Bond movies, so I did not see Spectre or the other one that he was in.
I didn't care for... It was not his fault. I just didn't care for his... Because I think he played Blumfeld, and I didn't really care for those. Spectre is like every other Daniel Craig movie is good.
Yeah.
So the first one, Casino Royale, perfect movie. And then the third one, Skyfall, which I just got on 4K Blu-ray, and I cannot wait to watch it because it's got the same cinematographer and director as 1917, so... I am ready for that shit. Anyway, I absolutely agree. My favorite role of his is definitely this one.
Yeah, he's fantastic as this
Dr. Schultz.
Yeah, and he's just so wholesome and pure, and really quite handsome and cute. You know, he was on an episode of SNL. I don't remember that episode, but I would like to rewatch it to see how he did on the live stage. But you know, he's He's an incredible actor, and I'm glad that America's gotten to know him, you know, and I'm also glad that he's also, like, not, you know, he does what he wants these days, and good for him.
Then we got Kerry Washington.
Oh, she's just so pretty.
So pretty.
So fucking pretty.
Very pretty woman. Like I said, I only watched Ray once, and I don't remember really who she played. Della Bay Robinson. I don't know
which that character was, that is. That was his wife.
So who does Regina King play?
God, I don't know. Maybe it was one of his other wives, because I know that he had a couple.
Kerry Washington's a great actress.
Yeah, she's stunning. I don't think I've seen a lot of her stuff, per se.
Not a lot. I saw Save the Last Dance. She's, I believe, Julia Stiles' friend in that movie.
Oh, man, I haven't seen that movie in I watched that movie on somebody's, like, fucking TV in their house.
I love Save the Last Dance. I used to have it on DVD.
Yeah.
I don't know why I don't have it anymore, but it is no longer in my collection.
She was the love interest for Ben Grimm in the Fantastic Four. She's the blind lady.
Okay.
She was really sweet in those movies. I liked her character, and I liked her relationship with Ben. I guess if I had to pick a favorite Kerry Washington movie, it would probably be this one. I know she's done a ton of TV as well. She was fucking huge on Scandal. Like,
yeah.
I didn't watch Scandal. I haven't watched How to Get Away with Murder. But, like, people fucking were
people love Scandal
for her. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Samuel L. Jackson playing Steven.
Motherfucking Jackson. First of all, we are recording this post Super Bowl. So it was very interesting to see Sam Jackson play the Steven role again for Kendrick Lamar's halftime performance. If you haven't seen that halftime performance, first of all, why? Oh my God, go watch it. And second of all, if you scrunch your nose up at it and cross your arms and go, I just didn't like it, then you're not paying fucking attention.
Yeah, look up some stuff.
Look up the fucking symbolism.
I remember when you and I were watching it live and we were just like, this is
dude, I insane. Called out that was a prison set, and you were like, no, it doesn't look like a prison, but it was meant to mimic the courtyard of a prison, while also being like a town.
And
like,
a street. So a street. We were both
fucking,
right.
Kendrick Lamar is a genius, is what I'm saying. And I don't even know his music that well, but like, fuck me.
I know you do. Two or three.
And, you know, 70,000 people screaming out A minor.
Yeah.
It was a nice, you know, nail in the coffin of Drake's existence. But Sam Jackson as that Uncle Tom-esque role, Uncle Tom / Uncle Sam role, is interesting because he's kind of reprising his role from this movie. But basically, Samuel L. Jackson took this character where he plays the head house slave. It is definitely known by a different name. He's sort of like, you know, he's the head of the household, and he is a black man that kind of hates being black. According to this IMDb chunk of trivia, he said that he wanted to make Steven into the most hateful and loathsome African-American character in movie history. Jackson also stated that he saw U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas as an entirely negative role model for Steven, as the judge inspired Jackson to play Steven as someone who not only didn't want to have anything to do with less fortunate men of color, but actively hated them and worked to make things worse for them where possible. Which, ho!
Wow.
Yowzas. Steven is one of the worst characters in this movie.
Absolutely.
To be, you know, a black man during slavery and actively working with the white people. Oh shit. Like, just oh shit. One thing I do love about Jackson's performance in this movie is when he has to play up being like the wise but slightly dumb old black man with the cane and the voice and everything.
Yeah.
And then when the few times that he drops the facade and he literally drops the cane and like pulls himself up to his height, like he's playing a role to the white people in that movie and to Django to an extent. And the few times we see that character break character, I thought was a very interesting choice in acting, and I thought he did a great job. I don't think anybody could have played that character but Sam Jackson. Who else do to play, you know, that character?
No, he does. He does a great job. And
motherfucking Sam Jackson.
After this movie, he did another Tarantino film, because he does most Tarantino films.
Oh, like, well, at least five, at least.
At least. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's great in Jackie Brown.
Fuck, I want to watch Jackie Brown again.
Great in Pulp Fiction.
He's great in Pulp Fiction.
But after this movie, he did The Hateful Eight, and his character in The Hateful Eight is fantastic. Yeah. And it was just one of those another movie where you're just like, all right, Tarantino, Sam Jackson,
yeah,
I'm ready to just watch what the two of them do together.
I think that it would be near impossible to pick a favorite Sam Jackson movie,
because he's so been in fucking everything. Hard. He's has been in everything.
Yeah, I mean, for God's sakes, he's Nick over, Fury. He's Frozone.
Over 200 performances.
Mace Windu. Motherfucking... He snakes on a plane.
I have had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
As I'm going through his filmography, I'm just like, he was great in this. He was great in that. I mean,
even some of his newer stuff, like Kong Skull Island, I thought he did a really great job in.
Such a fun movie.
Legend of Tarzan.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, is Nick Fury. We love him
as Nick Fury. He's because perfect, he's the exception to the show, but. Everybody deserved better than that show. In all honesty, if you were to be like, you have to pick a favorite Sam Jackson movie, I might have to say Die Hard with a Vengeance.
That's a good one.
I fucking love Die Hard with a Vengeance so much because of his chemistry with Bruce Willis. Like, the fact that they turned Die Hard into, like, a buddy cop movie, even though Zeus Carver, Sam Jackson's character, is not a cop, but the fact that that had to become like a buddy movie, they couldn't have picked anybody better. And I mean, I've talked at length about how much I love Die Hard with a Vengeance, but if I had to choose a favorite Sam Jackson movie, it might be that, you know, because he couldn't pick from any of his, you know, Nick Fury roles, because they're either very long and delightful, or they're short and delightful, or it's the show, which
I love his short and delightful performances that he's done in film.
Yeah, you do like it when he just pops up and pops up. Is Sam Jackson.
I mean, one of my favorite ones is Deep Blue Sea.
Fucking, you love that movie
because he shows up and you're like, all right, this is our main guy. Mm-hmm. We got this action hero, Thomas Jane.
Sam Jackson.
Got Sam Jackson here, so you feel like they're. And then what they do in that movie to Sam Jackson.
Yeah.
It's a great moment. And
least we forget, he's phenomenal in Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal.
It's probably one of the first movies I ever saw him in, because I didn't know who... I remember watching Jurassic Park and not knowing who he was.
Yeah, he is in Patriot Games. I know I saw Patriot Games as a kid.
Yeah, he plays the James Earl Jones character from... Hunt for Red October.
But, you know, for me as a person, as a human being that watched movies, yeah, Jurassic Park was my first real understanding of Sam Jackson. But I still fucking love Die Hard with
Vengeance. You guys really want to, like, look at... There's a really great film that I think people should check out. It's called The Red Violin.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Jackson's in that. He's not, like, a main character, but he's... in it, and his character does play a big role.
I think you showed that to me when we were dating. I think you're like, I need you to watch this film with me.
I'm sure it happened.
Deep Blue Sea and The Phantom Menace came out the same year.
It's not surprising.
Yeah.
My favorite Sam Jackson film would have to be Jackie Brown.
See, it's been so long since I've seen Jackie Brown that I couldn't say for sure, but like, we have to watch it soon because I need to.
Yeah. Well, I think once we're done with Kill Bill.
Yeah.
We're going to have to just watch the ones that weren't in the podcast just for funsies. Next, we've got Walton Goggins.
Walter Goggins?
Walton.
What?
Like the Waltons.
Walton Goggins goggle glasses?
Goggle glasses.
Walton Goggins goggle glasses? You don't even have to ask. The answer is Justified.
Justified.
Yeah. Fucking, it's...
Boyd Crowder, yeah, he's...
He's one of the greatest... One of the greatest pairings, like antagonistic duos, is fucking Timothy Oliphant as Raylan Givens and Walton Goggins as Boyd Crowder. Thank you.
Yeah.
Fucking those two play off each other on a Shakespearean level, and it's everything.
It's great.
I love Justified so much.
Justified's a great show.
Timothy Oliphant, come on our podcast, please. I love you.
If you enjoy Walton Goggins,
he's just done so much.
Tarantino brings him back for The Hateful Eight, mm-hmm. as well as a sheriff, as a newly appointed sheriff, and he's just as I feel like he's just as awful. Racist in Hateful Eight as he is in Django Unchained, but. That's kind of the, it's kind of, he's kind of been, pigeonholed into that kind of...
Well, he is a Southern actor.
He is. Walton Goggins has a great role, a reoccurring role, probably in like 3 or 4 episodes overall for mm-hmm. Sons of Anarchy.
I haven't seen The Righteous Gemstones, but I've heard people talk about
how that's good right. Walton Goggins
is he in is. That.
Both him and,
John Goodman, right?
Well,
Danny McBride.
Yeah. Is also
they
great.
Also did a show called Vice Principals that I didn't see, but I heard good things about. I did not watch all of Fallout, but I know he was great in that. You're loving him in Invincible.
Yeah, he's got.
You know, Walter Goggins is a delightful actor, and I'm glad that he's just kind of out there having fun and doing really whatever he wants, including making goggle glasses that the only time I ever wish I had a pair of Walter Goggins goggle glasses is when I cut onions at work.
Some people make gin. Some people make goggle glasses.
I mean, just the humor unto itself that somebody made a joke about goggle glasses and he went, okay. I know he was in an episode of Community. And like I said, you know, like he was in Mojave and he was in Forever Young with Mel Gibson back in 1992. But Walter Goggins is just out there living the life and good for him. He's a cutie.
Don Johnson as Don Big Daddy. Pretty funny role.
Don Johnson. When I think of Don Johnson, I think of this ugly art piece. And I'm not going to even be able to get a picture of it to show anybody. But my father found in a dumpster in Hollywood a art piece done by a Don Johnson. And while we don't know for sure, we do assume that it was him. And it's this like multimedia like art piece with a canvas with a bunch of puffy paint and this like these like weird like amorphous blob like cushion like things that stick out for it's impossible to describe. But we don't know for sure if it was from the Don Johnson, but we do like to refer to it as the Don Johnson. I always think of him, about that with him. Not too long ago, Caveman and I came across a Tubi or a fucking, what's the other one? The free TV channel on the Roku.
Pluto.
Thank you. Pluto's always a planet. But we came across a Pluto channel that was just nothing but Nash Bridges. And we watched an episode of Nash Bridges and it was rough.
It was.
So many fucking Dutch angles and zoom ins.
I grew up with that show too.
So many Dutch angles.
And I don't
Dutch
remember these Dutch angles and zoom ins.
It was so bad. And like
it's too
the
much.
Plot didn't make much sense, and the fact that his 18-year-old daughter was gonna marry his like 35-year-old coworker, and like just so much like Yasmin Bleeth was there, just existing, you know, just doe-eyed and beautiful, like that fucking Don Johnson.
And then of course, because of Don Johnson, this leads us to the scene where they are trying to.
The hoods.
Yeah, the hoods.
With the Ku Klux Klan. The fact that that one guy stood up for his wife and was like, my wife worked all day on these.
Yeah.
And if you don't respect that, then fuck you, I'm out. And then he just dips. Because he's like, screw you guys.
But then that.
If you can't respect my wife, I'm out. And that's the kind of behavior I like to see, even though it was from a Klansman.
Sure, he's doing one thing.
He's
in his
doing
life,
one
right?
thing right, and it's all.
But this leads us to
Jonah Hill
having a cameo in this.
I forgot that Jonah Hill was in it.
Like Don Johnson's. Actually, I don't think they were related. He was just there.
Yeah, he was just there.
They didn't say.
And honestly, I'm glad for it because this was definitely in the era where I still didn't think that Jonah Hill could act, and seeing him sort of would take me out of everything because I'm just like, oh, and then there's Jonah Hill.
MC Gainey played Big John what's his name? Brittle.
Mm-hmm.
Big John Brittle. He played Happy or Mr. Happy in Lost.
He was also in 1941, if I'm no, not my 41.
He was in Con Air.
He was in Con Air. MC Gainey is a great character actor who's been in just a ton of shit.
Sure.
He's done a lot of Westerns. Yes, he was in Con Air. He was in Club Dread with the Super Trooper guys. He was also in Beer Fest. He's the voice of the head guard in Tangled, the one that's going after Flynn Rider the whole time. You know, he's done a ton of shit, and he's always a delight. He's one of those character actors that you're always like, oh, yay. He's in The New Guy, and I fucking love The New Guy. It's such a stupid movie, but I love it so much. Like, yeah, Bruce Lee apparently is in The Mighty Ducks, too. But he's got that face, and he's got that voice, and he's just a great character actor, kind of perfect for Westerns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bruce Dern makes a quick appearance in this.
Laura Dern's dad.
Very in the beginning of the movie, playing the essentially the slave owner who originally owned Django and Kerry Washington's character before selling them off separately because they ran away. Bruce Dern, you know, he's been doing this shit since the beginning.
Stuff with Tarantino.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he was in the original Great Gatsby, The Burbs with Tom Hanks.
I never liked that movie.
He's been in, I think, a few Tarantino films. I know he came back for The Hateful Eight.
He's just gone like now, many. Right?
No, Bruce Dern's still alive.
Oh.
Still with us.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also got, and I think lastly, maybe, Zoe Bell was another character, another actress that Tarantino likes kind of like sliding in to his movies without you even noticing.
Oh, yeah, she's the stunt woman. Yeah. She was in, we talked about her before.
Well, yeah, she was the stunt woman in, or no, she was the wife of, Kurt Russell's wife in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes, and but this, she used to be a stunt woman.
Yeah, and she's been in a bunch of other Tarantino movies as well. But in this one, she is the lady who's wearing the mask, the bandana over her face. Yeah, so you can't. But her eyes, you can see.
I did wonder for a second who that was, and then I was like, oh yeah, she doubled Lucy Lawless in Xena.
And then we also have to at least point out that Quentin Tarantino has a terrible Australian accent.
Yes. And at least he doesn't say the N-word at all in this movie, which is shocking. Considering how much the N-word is said in this movie and how much he said it in Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
God, he said it way too much in Pulp Fiction. So I'm glad that we didn't have to hear him say it in this one. This movie... understandable for the time period and the subject matter, but the N-word is used way too much.
Every single time
it's used, it makes me deeply, deeply uncomfortable.
Which I think that's...
I know that's the point.
I think it's doing a couple of things. Yes, for time period and how terrible everybody and everything was.
Yeah.
But also, I think he wants to make his audience uncomfortable.
And I get it. But when you're raised by a racist and you yourself have actively tried to not think that way, the use of that word, it makes me uncomfortable. It made Leonardo DiCaprio uncomfortable. He didn't want to say it. He had a hard time with it until Sam Jackson and Jamie Foxx pulled him aside and were like, motherfucker, this is normal for us. Don't worry about it. Like, they had to be the ones that were like, go on, have at it. When it came to Leonardo DiCaprio using that word, because he didn't like how evil his character was.
He's pretty fucking evil.
And Tarantino was like, you have to go all in, otherwise people won't forgive you for that. Like, you can't half-ass that role. And I'm glad that they convinced him not to half-ass it. Both Tarantino, Jackson, and Fox were like, dude, you have to do it. Go in. Like, go hard, go in. Okay, man.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite scene in this movie?
Besides towards the end where everybody's getting shot up?
Yeah. Like, maybe a favorite smaller moment. Because for me, I really love the scene where Django and Schultz are having the conversation about, are you sure versus are you positive? Are you sure he's dead? Are you positive he's dead? And he shoots him a couple more times. I'm positive. I don't know. I loved the chemistry between Christoph Waltz and Jamie Foxx, and so I really loved how their characters interacted. I also loved at the end when Django retrieves the papers, you know, for his wife's freedom off of Schultz's corpse, and he says, Auf Wiedersehen. Schultz would not say that to Candy, but, you know, because it means I'll see you again. And he was like, I don't want to see you again. Like, fuck you, I don't want to see you again. So I always really like that moment, too.
That is nice.
Where he says goodbye to his mentor and his friend.
I really like the scene where, when Schultz is telling Django the story of Brumhilda.
Mm-hmm. It was just kind of the same story, right? Like, it's the same sort of folklore-esque story.
It is.
What we're watching.
It's very similar to any kind of hero story. It's also very similar to, the knight in shining armor defeating the dragon
and to save
the princess who's locked up in the tower. So you can tell where, you know, we got a lot of those kind of stories from.
Brumhilda.
I love the, one of my favorite scenes. First you see the way. The second scene where the introduction of Schultz, and the way he acquires Django.
Yes.
And he is a talented gunfighter. He's a bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But you also get to see his character in that short moment.
When he frees the slaves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially. And, like, you could either...
go help him.
Go help him.
Or... you know, here's a scone.
My favorite scene is definitely when they go to the next town.
Mm-hmm.
They go inside the bar.
Yes.
The guy freaks out because there's a black man in the bar, and they go get the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And he instantly kills the sheriff, goes back into the bar, and then they bring the marshal. And him, just the confidence. The make
swagger.
Sure you get the sheriff the first time, and now you can go get the marshal. But then at the very end, when he's explaining to the marshal everything, and that he's their sheriff that they elected is actually a criminal who's wanted, dead or alive. But when he's like, in other words, marshal, you owe me $200. Blank look on everybody's face.
I know, it's such a good moment.
It's a great moment.
Christoph Waltz is so fucking pure in this movie. What a joy to watch him in this film. I'm kind of sad that I haven't watched this movie more, just because, like, I mean, this is maybe the third time I've seen it, like, overall, and it just is a great fucking movie. Like, it's just good.
It's just good.
But, like, that's what Tarantino movies are. They're just fucking good. Of course.
Good and fun to watch.
Yeah.
And then time goes by and you're like,
oh, it's been a while.
It's just like with anything, like, even with Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
You forget about how good it is until you watch it. And remember, and oh, like, shit, this movie
shit.
Is
How
so
is
good.
How is this not on more people's lists? Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, everybody kind of knows about the scene where Leo crashes, or, you know, breaks the goblet in his hand and bleeds.
Yeah, he smacks his hand on
the
table and breaks the glass and then just keeps going.
Yeah, just keeps going.
And when you know what he just did
and
the fact that he keeps going is... really impressive that he just stays in character like that and just keeps going. But then I was wondering, they must have, you know, because obviously the camera does cut away from and then
it's
go back.
Fake blood that he smears all over Kerry Washington's
Thank
face.
God. I was like, because part of me is like, I could see
him just
doing the improv
of
being of like, my character is this evil that he would just smear blood over her face. And I was like, no, I hope that they cut, bandaged him up. And then, like, hey, now that you've cut your hand open and we've seen
the blood
and that you have cut yourself, how about we put some fake blood on your hand? And then
he wanted to not the real blood, but he did come up with the idea that it'd be interesting if he smeared the blood all over Brumhilda's face and took it to Tarantino and Kerry Washington, and they both loved it. So Tarantino, you know, got fake blood on set and made it happen. But, like, that's a really wonderful take of, like, serendipitous acting and...
Yeah, it's...
Like, being so in the moment and getting
kind of,
that...
It's kind of like improv, where you're like, it wasn't in the script that it was going
to
happen.
Yeah, it's a very much a yes-and moment.
Yeah.
But I think it leads to it, because without that, I don't know, it's somehow less threatening. Because, like, you feel threatened for Broomhilda. You know, you feel that she is in danger. You're in danger, girl. The fact that Leo had the idea of, like, okay, I've cut my hand. The character has cut his hand open. Now let's use it. And that his director and his co-star were like, yeah, let's to go for it. It's a really wonderful example of creative, like, working together. I loved the little boy blue outfit that Django wears at first. And I love when the...
that was his choice to wear that.
Yeah, when one of the slave girls is like, so you dress like that on purpose? Yeah. You want to dress like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that
cracked me.
You get to dress however you want.
Because he looks so
that.
Cool in, like, you know, the khakis and the jacket.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like
that jacket,
the
that
Django
hat,
look
the sunglasses.
Is, yeah, it's so hot. It's modern and it's hot. It's that cool. Little boy blue outfit was really funny because, like, that was the first time he got to dress himself.
Right.
And he chose something.
He chose that.
It was a choice.
It was a choice.
Of course, based on a painting by some famous painter whose name I don't remember and I'm not going to look up. But, you know, Tarantino talked about how he said to do movies that deal with America's horrible past with slavery and stuff, but to do them like spaghetti westerns, not like big issue movies. I want to do them like they're genre films, and they deal with everything that America has never dealt with because it's ashamed of it, and other countries don't really deal with because they don't feel they have the right to.
I saw that
and
quote.
I do appreciate that because that is, you know, if you think about slavery films, they're always the big Oscar-baity fucking bummer films. You know, look at 12 Years a Slave, look at any of the rest of them, Emancipation, all of them, Roots, you know, big important movies, right, for humanity to remember, you know, the lows of slavery and everything else. But, you know, Tarantino has a point. Like, this wasn't an Oscar Beatty movie. This wasn't a let's do something big and important and serious. He was like, I'm going to do a slavery film, but I'm going to do it my way. And honestly, it's one of the best of them because you get the point across, but then you get all the fun vengeance and gore and violence and, you know, the slaves winning in the end. And I love it. I love it when Django says to the two female house slaves, he's like, tell Miss Laura goodbye. They're like, bye, Miss Laura. And then he shoots her and she just like fucking flies back from the force of the gunshots. I love that scene so much.
That's so funny.
Like, just so good. Man, his vengeance on Candyland is spectacular. Just so, so entertaining.
Another actor in this movie that I remember somebody telling me about, and I wasn't really familiar with it because I hadn't watched it, but because Quentin Tarantino watches everything,
mm-hmm.
especially old spaghetti westerns, Franco Nero was the original Django in the 1966 film Django.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of where Tarantino got his idea for at least the character and the situation. But he also based a lot of it off of other things and his idea. Like you said, Franco Nero, played Django. It's interesting because his character, he's the guy that when Jamie Foxx, is watching the two guys
fight. Yeah.
The other slave owner
sits
down at the bar with him, and Django's like, or the guy's like, what's your name? Django.
Yeah.
The spell it, you know,
D
is silent. And he says, I know. And that's because he was Django.
Oh, interesting.
He was the villain in Die Hard 2.
Oh, okay.
He was in John Wick 2.
All right.
He's been in like almost 250 different things.
Great character actor.
Yeah, character
and
actor.
Tarantino fucking loves his character actors.
He was in The Pope's Exorcist recently as he played the Pope.
He was the Pope who was getting the Exorcist. I don't know. I didn't see that movie, but
his character is named Amerigo Vespucci.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the name of the guy who called America America?
He was an explorer, Amerigo Vespucci.
That's it.
So very close.
Yeah.
Both named Amerigo.
That's why Vespucci. We're the United States of America.
Yeah, America, Amerigo.
Yeah. We could have been the Vespuccis.
The Vespuccians.
We would never have done what we've done if we were called the United States of Vespucci.
Vespucci.
Vespucci. Hey, what are you doing? Hey, what do you know? La Palma, bring over the cannoli.
Essentially, they named it after him because he was the first European to realize that the Americas were completely separate from Asia.
Yeah.
That it wasn't, that they weren't running into the other side of Asia when...
They were running into its own giant continent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
And that's really the only...
reason that it's... The shit you learn on Movie Mingle Podcast.
And I think...
For as little as 0 cents a day,
you're learning nothing.
Nothing.
Free.
It has cost us money to put on this podcast.
It does. So what would you give Django if we're done talking about Django?
It's a solid film. It's highly entertaining. It's not Tarantino's best, but I thoroughly enjoy it. I would give it a 4. Yeah, I would give it a 4. Maybe a 4.5. 4. It's in there. I mean, it's not Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is perfection on every possible level, but it is still a great form. So yeah, I would give it a solid 4. What about you, my dear?
I was also going to give it a 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, solid Tarantino film.
Like, it's
solid movie in general. Like,
ton of fun.
It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch racist assholes get their.
It really is. Their coming dues. Really is enjoyable to watch racist assholes get their comeuppance.
I love watching Nazis getting punched.
Fucking who doesn't like
Nazi getting slave owners
punched.
Getting shot in the head.
Oh god, it's gonna be so entertaining to watch over the next few years.
I've been playing Red Dead Redemption 2 since 2019.
Yeah, forever.
And I still, you know, I played through it. You know what? It really helped me get through the pandemic.
Me too.
It was a fun. It was a fun cowboy game. For those of you who don't know, it takes place in 1899, and one of my favorite things to do because there are Klansmen in the game.
Yeah,
there are retired, I guess you could say.
Yeah, slave hunters.
Slave hunters or slave kind of like. Big John Brittle, and it is thoroughly enjoyable to shoot them.
Yeah, no, and I like watching Arthur Morgan shoot and punch them in the face because he is such a sweet, soft boy.
Or
so good and so pure, never done a bad thing in his
life. Or soldiers who are still, even though it's 1899, soldiers who are still loyal to the South.
And,
yeah. So,
look, I mean, you
endlessly
should...
entertaining to.
I can't believe that, you know, in 2025, we need to say that racism is bad and slavery was bad and you shouldn't be a Nazi. But apparently we have to reiterate that because this world's a shit show. God. But it is never not going to make me happy to see a Nazi get punched in the face and a slave owner get shot in the face. So, and a Nazi shot in the face for that matter. I mean,
well,
either way.
You punch him first.
You punch him first and then you shoot him in the face. Because if it was good enough for Indiana Jones and Django Freeman, then God damn it, it's good enough for me.
So, Maggie.
Yes, Cayman.
I have 2 questions for you.
Hit it.
You guys can do some pretty wicked Chewbacca impressions, so I'm wondering if Chewbacca were to review this movie, what would he sound like?
That was kind of a sexy...
That was sexy Chewbacca.
I don't want to meet that Wookiee.
That was a little more Donald Gleason. Than
it was a little more Donald Gleason, but...
But delightful.
That first Chewbacca impression was...
Oscar.
And then the sexy Wookiee.
Fucking Josh Horowitz is so much fun as an interviewer. He just has, and I'm assuming that's who that was. I mean, I know that for a fact that's who that was. But Josh Horowitz has so much fucking fun with the people that he interviews. And I adore it. I really should listen to his podcast more, but I don't.
So Maggie.
Yes, honey.
First question.
Yes.
Would the appearance of Oscar Isaac have made Django Unchained a better film?
No. I don't think it was necessary to have his gorgeous, gorgeous Guatemalan face in this movie. No.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, second question.
This is going to be a tough one.
If there is a character
in
this movie that Oscar Isaac should play, Which one would it be?
You know what? He either could have played the Jonah Hill role, just because I did not find Jonah Hill particularly entertaining in this role. In fact, I was just taken out by the fact that I was like, Jonah Hill. Surprise, Jonah Hill. And I was like, fucking, why is he here? So I guess he could have done that role just to take out the Jonah Hill of it all. Or it's such a small part, but it would have been really entertaining to see him play the marshal in the town where Schultz and Django go in and kill the sheriff. Just because I think that he, you know, just a small, like, marshal role would have been fine. If I had to pick anything. You know, I guess he could have been one of the, were they slave traders? Were they just mining employees?
It was a mining company who owned slaves.
Yeah. So, like, I guess he could have been one of those guys and gotten blown away by Jamie Foxx. That also would have been entertaining. But I'm going to go with replacing Jonah Hill with Oscar Isaac, as should be done in most things that Jonah Hill's been in.
Bummer.
Except for Wolf of Wall Street, because he was legit in that. But otherwise, you know, just, Oscar Isaac. Yay. And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on Django Unchained, and we hope that you enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. Coming up on Saturday, we have got our second February bonus episode for Caveman's birthday month on The Thing from 1982, a movie that I have never wanted to see, and I'm angry that I have to watch. So tune in to find out my thoughts on that particular film. And then next Wednesday, we will be dropping our episode on Baby Driver, which is another movie that I don't want to rewatch, and I really don't want to have to rewatch. Yikes. So tune in next week to find out my thoughts on that film as well. As ever, you can find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube as Movie Mingle Podcast. And you can write us any of your thoughts, questions, comments, and concerns, and ideas for season two at moviemingle@gmail.com. We would love to get more of your letters, frankly. Feel free to rate us 5 stars or whatever you feel we deserve on your podcast platform of choice, and tell your friends, parents, coworkers, people that you love, randos on the street, about our silly little podcast, because we really want somebody to pay us to have to watch some of these movies. But more so, we also would just like to have more people know about this silly little show and all the love that we've put into it for almost a year now. We're coming up on our year anniversary, which is quite exciting. Until then, just take care of yourselves out there, my friends. Be safe in this big, wide, wacky, horrible world of ours. Remember, racism is bad, and punch Nazis in the face. But until next time, go mingle. Bye!
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach.
What's that bar? I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. 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 Toga.